If you run a business large or small, get ready to take a lot of notes, because it's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Thank you, and you're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business here on AM 770 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. As our listeners know, this show is about real ideas, real people, real businesses, real success stories on Real Radio 77 WABC. But it's all about you. It's about how you can get ahead in today's business world. We share all types of business and marketing strategies to get you ahead in the business world. Each week we have a very high-profile guest. The last 2 weeks, I just want to talk about for a minute. 2 weeks ago we had Captain Sully Sullenberger, and I have a copy here of the New York Post that the very next day picked up on the current events-related material. LaGuardia had recently announced a brand-new plan to totally renovate the airport, a $4 or $5 billion plan. And they actually had not included lengthening the runways. Captain Sullenberger spoke about that. He talked about the danger that's posed by drones to aircraft and various other interesting tidbits. Of course, we also spoke about the business lessons that could be taken from his incredible experience when he saved 155 people by landing in the Hudson. Last week, we had a senior vice president of applications at GoDaddy. We had Stephen Aldrich. He was fantastic. Also, we got great feedback on that. He had a lot of great tips about when a person should be redoing their website, how often they should be updating the content on their website, and many other features that have to do with being an operation in today's business world. Well, with us in the studio tonight, we have none other than Saul Friedman, the managing partner at Saul and Friedman & Company, a leading accounting firm in the New York area. Some background about Saul and his company. Mr. Friedman started the company back in 1974, leading the firm for over four decades. The firm is known for excellence in servicing clients' businesses beyond the books, and that, of course, includes tax strategies, their network of services, and the general familiarity in the business world. Over the 40 years, thousands of clients have flocked to see Saul Friedman and seek his wise business counsel. Saul oversees a team of 25 professionals located in three different locations throughout the tri-state area. The firm recently moved its headquarters into its own brand new building in the heart of Brooklyn. With that intro, we give a warm welcome to Saul Friedman. Saul, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm pleased that you invited me to come down here and speak tonight and answer your questions, whatever you may have.
Yes, well, thank you so much. I have to say, we've had many guests now. This is, I believe, our seventh show, and we've had many requests to have on someone like yourself. And of course, each guest, we had Matt Britton from MRY, who specializes in marketing to millennials. We've had Josh Moore, the general manager of Uber, and each one had incredible perspective from their unique vantage point in the business world. But we've had many requests. They say, please have on someone that could educate us on the nuts and bolts of running a business, how to figure out how it's being monetized, and how do we have an idea of tracking the profitability. And when we realized we set out, we wanted to interview someone like yourself, and we really appreciate that you're here with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Now, before we get into the meat and potatoes, I notice you have someone on your right, Simeon Friedman. Hello, Simeon. What's your role in the firm?
Hi there. A pleasure to be here. I'm a partner in the firm. I've been at the firm at 15 years, and most of what I do is to sort of bring in new clientele of my generation age. On top of what I do, which is the regular accounting and tax and consulting work, I also try to bring in the new clients and expand the firm. So I've been very implemental in that aspect over the past couple of years.
Excellent. So we're going to naturally. So I would even say that some of the questions will be directed towards Saul or Simeon, and you could decide who wants to grab the question as I toss them out. Okay. We have much to cover in tonight's interview, and I'd like to jump in with perhaps the number one issue that every medium and small business faces, and that is how to manage the business successfully regarding its finances and reporting. And let me just explain. It's no secret many businesses are opened by some entrepreneurial individual who is naturally very talented and passionate about his product or service, but perhaps knows very little about the financial side of running a business. I imagine you run into this frequently, and how would you advise, and really, is there any help for a business that has run this way for years, the wrong way, and now realizes, hey, you know, there's a business side to every business, and we have to now get a true handle on how we're profitable, et cetera. Could you explain?
There are two types of business people that we encounter. Certain business people are forming a company currently. They would be called a startup. They have experience in business. They work for other people, but they're basically starting out on their own for whatever reason they feel that they can do much better on their own. Those people are usually not attracted to our firm because they usually go to the neighborhood accountant who does their taxes once a year. They don't feel they require banking service or tax strategies, planning. So they normally we don't attract the real startups. The niche that we attract are people that have been in business 3, 4, 5 years, have grown, have a number of employees, need financial reporting, need tax planning, need banking relationships, and they basically come to us and say, we've outgrown our present one-man operation accountant, and they come to us in order for us to guide them to be able to really grow and expand their business. It usually, when people like this come into our firm, we usually sit down with them and we discuss at length what their advantages are, how they see themselves in the industry. But we also take a look at their books and records, their reporting mechanism, their relationship with banks, with attorneys, labor laws, etc. And we advise them accordingly. And we basically open up for them the professionals that they would need in the long term in order to really expand the business. We are basically at that time between 4 and 5 years being in business, these clients need some hand-holding. And our expertise over the years and our expertise with the various individuals in the firm given the opportunity to kind of pick the brains of people which combined have a couple of hundred years of experience in business. And those are the type of clients that we like to start out with. As an indication, some of our biggest clients started with us when they were very much in their infancy. I use an example. We have one client that started with us in 1976. He was in business at that time for 5 years, but in 1976 he did about $2.7 million in business. Last year he did $2.5 billion with a B in business. Mm. So they grew along with us, and obviously we do all his tax planning, we do all his banking negotiations for him, for this client. So that's the way they grow along with us in our firm.
Hmm. Now, if you could just provide some guidance on the importance of, and you had mentioned this, of having good reporting and a firm such as yours that could really stare in the face of a business owner and say, you know, you might think that everything is doing great and it's exciting and everything, but hey, when you look at the reporting, something is not adding up, and we have to adjust accordingly.
In order to best answer this question, I'll defer to my son Simeon, because he's watched from the outside some of my older clients that have been here for more than 15 years and how they've grown and why they're successful by having good advice and good accountants and good attorneys. He's looking at it from the outside in, so I'll defer to him to give an answer.
That's
to your question.
Fair. Okay, Simeon?
Yeah. A lot of what we find are businesses that have grown, as we said, and people are obviously focused on products, on what they're selling, expanding their business. but you also have to have a way to see what's going on in your business. And the talent of an entrepreneur in growing his business, it has its talents. But that does not mean that finance is something that they are focused on.
Right, correct.
And starting up a business, you don't necessarily invest a lot in the finance department. Many clients that we get don't have a complete set of books and records that they can go ahead and analyze their trends and how they're doing.
Interesting.
Part of what we do is sort of educate the owners of the company that although you're not necessarily detail-oriented as far as how your business is running from the finance side, you still have to have some sort of idea as to what's going on. And part of what we do is streamline their systems so that they can see what's going on a daily basis, a monthly basis, and make decisions accordingly. So a lot of what we have to do is sort of set up their finance department, make sure that they have the systems in place so that they can on a day-by-day basis see what's going on. It's also a matter of gearing their minds in looking at certain information such as their break-even points and their margins and things that they need to focus on to make sure that they're just not selling without making any profits. So that's a lot of training on our part. But at the end of the day, an educated consumer is better than a non-educated consumer. So we always like to have our clients educated as far as what's going on in their business and not necessarily rely on us to come in and tell them how they're doing.
Okay, so you're saying that you can guide and you have guided your clients so that they could have fantastic record keeping and financials in place so that then you could then do reporting either on a monthly basis
Correct.
Or a quarterly basis.
Because information is key. There's a lot of information out there. It's a matter of recording the information and then being able to retrieve it in the format that can sort of give you insight in how you're doing and you can make the decisions.
I would like to add one other thing, and that's one of my pet peeves. Okay. Information that you attain, no matter what, has to be timely. If you have your controller, bookkeeper, accountant come in every quarter and he tells you 2 months after the quarter how you did in the first quarter, you're 5 months too late. It has to be done timely. And the way we train our staff and the staff of the clients that we handle, that is very important to close a month by the fifth of the month, to really get the reporting up to par timely. Once it's timely, you can use the information. If it's not timely, it's usually worthless, almost like yesterday's paper.
It's fascinating you say that. And we're not even talking about the fact that we live in a day and age where everything is so fast and but that's incredible. You push your clients to have the data to you by the 5th. And like the 5th, 6th is already almost like you're getting antsy. It's like late.
They know that we keep that we ask for the 5th, and we're happy if they have it by the 10th, but no later.
Fascinating. Now, Simeon, you touched on something, if I may. You mentioned something before about product-based versus service-based. You mentioned product-based, and I'm going to just phrase the question here. How would you guide a product-based business versus a service-based business differently?
Well, obviously, a product-based business is a business that it's a matter of what you can buy the product for and what you can sell the product for.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's a lot of competition there. So you sort of try to be innovative with your products to attract the consumer. A service-based business, it's pretty much service, meaning I'm not selling a product. So you obviously have to focus on that service because if you're providing a service, you want to make sure that you do the service efficiently, timely, and cost-effective so that you can be profitable. And the main component on a service-based business is probably labor.
Right.
As opposed to product, it's a matter of what kind of deal you can get on the product and how the quality of the product. So it is really a horse of a different color. Now, we do find today product-based businesses that are sort of trying to get the competitive edge by marketing themselves a certain way. And on top of that, add some sort of service that the competitors don't provide. So there's sort of a added component to a product-based business where they are adding certain service components so that the customer will have a choice of going somewhere where they just get the product and they don't have the service versus a place where they can get the product and have the service as well.
Very, very interesting. Now I turn to Saul. Over the years, you've negotiated and structured many partnerships, I'm sure.
Yes, I did.
Yes, okay. What are the important steps that one should pay attention to when getting into a business partnership?
There are two. This question has really two parts to it. If the question is when you're getting into a partnership, that's one thing. If you are already in a partnership, that's another thing. People come to me and ask me my opinion about partnerships, whether to go into a partnership. And what I say to them is simple terms. I use a mathematical equation that everybody can understand. If you are one and your partner is one, and 1 + 1 = 2, don't go into a partnership. In other words, why do you have to split with somebody if each one of is contributing half? You might as well stay yourself. Then you avoid all kinds of problems, misunderstandings, disputes, and whatever else there is. However, if 1 + 1 = 3 or more, means the two of you together can accomplish a lot more than each one of you separate added together, then it is worthwhile to have a partnership. But partnerships mostly create conflicts down the line. Because no two people, just like husband and wife who've dated for years, most people, when they become partners, they've never done business with each other. Some are temperamental, some are freewheeling, there's different attitudes. And that's the biggest problem you have. And when people come to me that are about to go into a partnership, after they've determined that the 1 + 1 = 3 or more, okay. I think the most important part of a partnership agreement, and I insist that it be in every partnership agreement, shareholders agreement, whichever term you want to use, is a binding arbitration clause with a prearranged arbitrator. In other words, you go into business, choose somebody that you believe is a businessman that will understand anything that comes up. You're not going to go to court. You're not going to fight in the streets. You're going to go to this individual to straighten it out. I've been chosen many times to be that arbiter, and I know how easy it is. You hear two sides, and
easy.
Then you say, for me,
okay.
You hear both sides, and you hear on one side it's ego, and on the other side it's face-saving. So you got to play a little bit with the practical psychology of people, and you basically say, this is how I think you should do it, and they're both happy. Because they both think that they got themselves a good deal. This is one end when before you become a partner. Once a partnership comes to me, mm-hmm. I always say, when did you prepare your partnership agreement? And most of them say, we don't have one, or 5, 10 years ago. Well, that's when I insist that they really sit down over a cup of coffee, not in the office, and really discuss all the ins and outs of what happens if I get sick, what happens if I want to take a longer vacation, what happens if I want to bring a son or a daughter into the business. And you iron all that out, including the clause of having a disinterested third party to help out if there is conflict. But you got to be really very careful. And if you're sitting in a position where you think, I know this man so well, we will never, ever have a fight. We will never have a dispute. It just does not happen. So you have to plan for it. It's like pre-planning a divorce. You have to plan for it and put the mechanisms into place so that it is a vibrant and healthy partnership. And as I said before, the two of you together will accomplish a lot more than each one of you separately.
Really incredible advice. I just, if I may, from your lifetime of experience, is there a particular favorite partnership story that you have with a happy ending? Or it's ongoing? Or
well, happy ending. You know what? Everybody likes to win. And if you negotiate something or arbitrate something where both thought they're winners, or even if both thought they're losers, In other words,
but it's still equal.
As long as the one guy feels that the other guy also lost, so they all feel good. I've had a partnership that comes to mind. I've had a partnership where two partners were running a business, two separate divisions, two separate product lines. And because of ego, each one wanted to show the other one how much better they are. And since each one wanted to do it, they did not act in the interest of the total business. They acted in the interest of their own division. It took me a couple of years to negotiate and basically spin off the two businesses. I said, you handle your product line. The interesting part about it was, once that happened, it took a while to do because it wasn't an even split.
Sure.
Both of them are remarkably a lot more successful. They're great friends. They do business with each other, but I would say on one of the businesses, business doubled, profits tripled. The other business, at least 50 to 75% of an increase. Together, they were just on ego trips. Separately, they're able to perform. And to this day, I kind of feel proud. The client says, oh, big deal, you got two clients out of it. You had one and now you have two. But aren't you? They're really very happy that it happened that way.
So I guess yeah, the happy ending over here is that the partnership split.
But that's correct. That was the best outcome for that particular situation. Well, you're tuned to 77 WABC here on the Mind Your Business program with Yitzhak Saftless in the New York, New Jersey metro area and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. It's easy to connect with me on social media. On Twitter, it's Y Saftless. Facebook is Yitzhak Saftless. You could connect with me on LinkedIn. We're going to take a short commercial break and back with Saul and Simeon Friedman of the Saul N. Friedman and Company CPA firm and business consultant right here on the Mind Your Business program.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your services and programs. It has to deliver just the right message, the right way, to make customers excited about what you offer and interested in working with you. Online, you have to be on the money to make the money. So go with the best. Website with Brains. Their experienced team will plan, write, design, and program a winning website that combines simplicity and flexibility with powerful features that will make you the king of content marketers. And they make it so easy. All of their websites are made with an easy, user-friendly interface. Website with Brains will have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Take control of your online marketing today. Call Website with Brains for a free consultation and see how they can improve your online presence. 1-800-WEB-9018. That's 1-800-WEB-9018, or visit them online at websitewithbrains.com.
We're back on the Mind Your Business program with Yitzhak Saftless, and with us in studio this week, we have Saul Friedman and Simeon Friedman of the Saul N. Friedman CPA firm and business consultants. We now move on to the subject of acquisitions, and sometimes there's actually confusion between acquisitions and mergers. I'm not sure if Saul or Simeon wants to tackle this. What's the difference, first of all, between an acquisition and a merger?
An acquisition is where you basically go out and buy a company in totality, and it's yours. Handled by picking certain assets, certain liabilities that you take over, certain employees. You're not basically taking the whole company. Or even if you are taking the whole company, it's basically your, as an individual, standalone company. In a merger is where you have two companies doing almost the same exact thing, and just for economies of scale, you just put the two of them together, you leave everything in place, you try to avoid duplicate overhead items. That's usually a merger. We are usually more involved in acquisitions where the client is outright buying a company, which he'll own at 100%, and that's what we usually work with.
Now, in terms of acquisitions, what suggestions do you have for someone to land a great deal in acquiring this an entity?
It's a long process. However, I like to start with a few basic questions. A client calls me and he says, I'm looking to buy ABC Company. I would ask
We're on ABC Radio.
Okay, that's okay. Why I used ABC.
Okay.
I ask some basic questions. Mm-hmm. Number one, why is the seller selling? That to me is very important. Today, a good successful business is hard to attain, and why would somebody be selling? If the answer is he's selling because he lost interest in the business or because he doesn't like the industry or something like that, that's like a little red light flashing. Mm-hmm. The answer I'd love to hear is the man is retiring. He's 70, 75 years old. He's been in this business for 40, 50 years. He wants to retire. He wants to leave his business. And he wants to play golf or do whatever he has to do. That is basically a sign of non-failure, but it's a sign of success. Man wants to have an orderly transition to somebody else. So that's the first question you ask. The second question I ask is, how did you find out about this deal? If it's advertised in the papers, that's a negative. If it was solicited by email through a broker, that's a little bit negative. Word of mouth or somebody, a salesman in the industry came and said, you know, this guy wants to retire, who's not an official business broker, that's a positive. So if you really want to get a good deal, find somebody that's retiring and he wants to sell his business. Those are usually the much better deals.
You know, it's very interesting. Last week we had on Steve Aldrich, the Senior Vice President of Acquisitions at GoDaddy, and he talked about if someone is going to be interested in selling their business. But the way he framed it, he says when a person is running a business, they have to have their heart in it like they're going to run it forever. Don't have an eye. Now I'm talking about the other side of it. Don't have an eye like, okay, I'm going to build it up just to sell it. Build it like you're running forever. And then if there's some opportunity that comes along, you can then evaluate it at that point. But it's very interesting because the way with your incredible experience and lifetime of guiding people on this, the way you framed it, it's fascinating. I mean, if just something just comes along, hi, there's a business for sale, like you start, even it seems that even before you start looking at the numbers, you start, you know, you put your thumb to the table and like,
absolutely. You have to do detective work.
For instance,
I would ask the client, why are you looking to buy a company? And again, that guides me in my thinking. There are two reasons why people buy companies. One is a strategic investment, and one is an investment acquisition. Strategic acquisition, investment acquisition. Investment acquisition means that I'm looking at this company, I look at EBITDA, it's making X dollars per year, I pay a multiple, and I figure out based on cap rates, et cetera. It's really an investment like you would invest in something, in anything else that you invest. I shy away from those. What I like to see when one of my clients wants to buy a company, it's a strategic investment. And what's strategic? Strategic is somebody is buying a company. I'll use an example. Let's assume you operate a chain of warehouses on the East Coast.
Okay.
And a company comes along that you find somebody's retiring with a chain of warehouses on the West Coast. As we know, trade happens with Europe through the East Coast. Trade happens with the China and whatever through the West Coast. It doesn't pay to ship the goods between the West Coast and the East Coast. Right. Therefore, to operate two warehouses, one on the West, one on the East, you basically became a national company. That's called a strategic investment. You are buying a company which the two companies together will do far better than each company separately. Just like I mentioned
before. Just like you mentioned about partnerships.
Correct, about partnership. If the two companies together, you can have one central management office for finances, banking, taxes, administrative bookkeeping and all that. You can have one central sales organization for everything. You have two two plants on different places. That's a tremendous kind of investment.
Now, on that particular note, and this applies whether it's the type of acquisition you described or merely more of a merger, is there a formula that deals with the excess in positions, I mean, to avoid duplicity in terms of staff, et cetera?
Well, that separates basically the men from the boys. Once you acquired another company for strategic purposes, you have to go through line by line by line on the P&L, even on the balance sheet, and determine what expenses are duplicated. And, of course, you try to get try to minimize that. And, therefore, the earnings of the acquired company go up just by the fact that you have overhead in your own place that you're not going to have to duplicate in the right. acquired company. And that's the way you look at it. You do an analysis line by line.
We're speaking with Sol Friedman and Simeon Friedman, partners at Sol and Friedman & Company, a leading CPA firm and business consultant group in the tri-state area, right here on the Mind Your Business program with Yitzhak Saftlis on 77 WABC. We touched before about selling a business. How can someone assess the true value of their business?
Okay. In order to answer the question properly, one of the things that I've been doing in the last 10 years as my clients have been getting older, whenever we have a sit down, usually a couple of times a year, I ask a simple question. I say, John, what is your exit strategy? You have a business. It's successful. What is your exit strategy? Nobody lives forever. Nobody wants to work forever. What is your exit strategy? And they start hemming and hawing. I never thought about it. So in the next meeting, I bring it up again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And it usually boils down to two choices. Once you get into your 60s, 70s, and you really have a successful business, there's two ways of having that business continue. One is by selling the business to an outsider, as I said before, retiring owner wants to sell the business. The other is to leave it for members of the family. So if an individual is set in his ways that he has a son, a daughter, or an uncle, whatever, in the business, and he wants to keep it in the family business, well, that's his exit strategy. That's one plan. But usually they say, well, my children are not interested in this business or they're not going to be good at it, and one is a lawyer and one is a doctor, etc. Then we have to start positioning the company for sale. The worst thing you can do is decide today that next year you're selling the business, because there has to be planning in this, and it's not a year that you have to do it. You have to get your business to a stage where it could be marketable. If anybody thinks that your whole business is standing on you, on the individual owner, in other words, all your relationship with customers and with employees is all you, the minute you're out, the business falls apart. So now you have to put in second-tier management. You should hire a consultant in the industry who's going to tell you, how do I make my business look better in a sale? I'm not talking about the numbers. I'm talking about management, branding, even the shape of the books and the reporting. Maybe it's time to hire one of the big four firms to start doing an audit, so it should be and it should be more saleable based on the numbers. You have to take all that you have to take all that into account. The person that can tell you how to evaluate a business is somebody who has expertise in that industry. Every industry is different. There are certain industries you can sell a business based on revenue, so it's a multiple of revenue. Okay. There are certain businesses that are sold as a multiple of EBITDA. There are certain businesses that are sold in a combination of both. It all depends on the industry. So you have to find out each particular industry, how it's sold, and gear your sales pitch towards that. And that requires planning. I usually say it's between 3 and 5 years it takes to plan out an exit strategy. Simeon, do you have anything to add to this?
Again, it's a matter of being prepared making sure that you're building up the strength of a business, as you say, so that it can be marketable accordingly. You don't wake up one day to the next and decide to sell.
the difference between the Simeon and myself, okay. My clients, the ones I have, are in the process of selling, and his clients, the younger ones, are in the process of buying. Right. So that's his expertise.
Fascinating. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I have a question directed at Simeon. You're tuned to the Mind Your Business program here on 77 WABC. Back with you in a moment.
Your company website is crucial to your success. Providing information about your services and programs, it has to deliver just the right message, the right way, to make customers excited about what you offer and interested in working with you. Online, you have to be on the money to make the money. So go with the best. Website with Brains. Their experienced team will plan, write, design, and program a winning website that combines simplicity and flexibility with powerful features that will make you the king of content marketers. And they make it so easy. All of their websites are made with an easy, user-friendly interface. Website with Brains will have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Take control of your online marketing today. Call Website with Brains for a free consultation and see how they can improve your online presence. 1-800-WEB-9018. That's 1-800-WEB-9018. Or visit them online at websitewithbrains.com.
We're back in the Mind Your Business program on 77 WABC with Yitzhak Seftos here. As I indicated before the break, this question is directed at Simeon. The firm itself has been in business for over 4 decades and overseeing all different types of operations and entities out there, large, medium size, etc. What's the number one tip you would recommend for a business to get ahead in today's world?
Well, the first tip I would tell the business owner is, does he know what his drive is or what his goals are to attain? In other words, you have to know where you're going before you start heading out to where you're going. If you don't know where if you don't know where you intend to end up, then you're sort of not controlling how your business is going to grow. You have to have a vision, and you have to drive towards that vision, and you got to think big. But you have to have that vision. Now, how do you make decisions? You have to understand your product. You have to make sure that you market it properly with firms like yours Bottom Line. You have to be able to differentiate yourself, your business, your product, or your service. Why is it different than my competitors? So you have to really organize your business in a way that people can define it over the competitors. And to make decisions, you can only make business decisions by having information. Today, with computers, there is an infinite amount of information. Having the information is one thing, but figuring out how to analyze the information is another thing. Now, right, you have business owners that are not very detailed-oriented, and they're not interested in the QuickBooks reports that can be 20 pages long that they have to go and decipher and figure out what they're looking at. It is always something that I advise my clients and part of what we do for our clients, which is to develop a dashboard or a snapshot, a one-pager. Just a one-pager or a two-pager of the basic important information that the executive needs to see on a daily basis, which sort of drives his decision-making process. So at the end, the biggest tip that I can give is know where you're heading, make sure that you're structured accordingly, and you have the information to drive where you want the business to go.
I'd like to add one other thing. This dashboard, which I've seen the younger people in my firm develop a one-pager, the information that you can get. And in all my career, I never was able to do that, just to explain to the audience the importance of it. You can have a one-page just by pressing a button, and it ties into any software you have if it's properly done. I'd like to know, an owner says a query, I'd like to know, anybody that owes us over $10,000 over 90 days, you press a button and you get that list. If normally you would get a schedule of accounts receivable, you have pages and pages. And by the time you get to the second page, you're bored. A prime example, another thing that comes out very well in the dashboard, is could you rank our customers, our top 10 or 20 customers? Could you rank it by revenue? That's easy. Even QuickBooks can do that. Could you rank it by margins? That's a little tougher to do.
Right.
You might find that you have a customer that you're doing $100,000 a month, and it's giving you a 10% margin. That's $10,000 a month. Okay. You have a customer that you're doing $50,000 a month, and it's giving you a $15,000 margin. Which is the better customer?
Wow.
Who pays on time? Shipping costs to each of these customers.
Right.
You can have all that on the dashboard. And I like to make a joke. You know, the joke is that this guy is selling a product that cost him a dollar a piece, and he's selling it for 90 cents. He meets his friend, and his friend says, what are you accomplishing with that? He says, I know that it's not making money, but I make it up in volume. So he's selling it. You could be selling and turning the merchandise or whatever and not making any money. That's where dashboards get in so handy.
Wow. Very, very important advice. And again, your firm provides that for, you know, for all your clients.
Yes. Yeah. And we've just started with this program to initiate these type of services for our clients, and we have a waiting list.
And we would design it to the uniqueness of the client and to what the executive wants to see, because everyone has something else that they want to monitor on a daily basis. So it all depends on
so
what
you could
it is.
Tailor that software based on, first of all, of course, based on the type of industry, product-based, service-based, et cetera. And then this is a very interesting point you're bringing up. Some CEOs are more interested in the profitability in terms of vis-a-vis the staff or the product, or how much
it's the inventory level. Some people are interested in knowing what money do I have in the bank today. That's my important item. So everybody has their unique or their specific items that they want to look at a daily basis. It's a matter of taking the information and putting it into a concise one or two pages.
Got you. This question is for Saul, and this is being in business for the amount of years, 40-plus years, you've experienced a fair share of strong recessions. What advice, and this is an important question that we get feedback from our listeners and that we've posed it to people of experience. What advice could you give on how to survive an economic downturn?
The advice I give, and I'm asked this, I'm not asked these questions very often, because when times are good, nobody thinks that times will turn bad. I'll probably get asked this question the next couple of months over and over as the stock market is doing. I have a simple advice for people. In whatever industry you are, manage your finances in such a way that if a dip comes, I like to call it a dip. I don't call it a recession or depression or anything bad. But we all know that there are dips. Manage your dips in such a way that if something happens to your company, you're not wiped out penniless going on welfare. In other words, don't put all your eggs in one basket. There are industries, for instance, that come to mind. Years ago in the diamond and jewelry industry, when people made money, they invested and they bought more inventory and more inventory and more inventory. Their wealth was in diamonds or in jewelry. Then if something happened in the marketplace, they not only lost their business, but they lost all their assets. Take some of the money off the table. Put it away. Invest it. Put it in the bank. And today, the warning I give to clients today, with the real estate market being so hot, everybody's doing 1031 exchanges. They're reinvesting all their profits again in real estate, again in real estate. They're not taking anything off the table in case interest rates go up high and cap rates go up high and they can't refinance their buildings. They can't sell the buildings for what they want. It's very, very important to plan, not to plan. You should know, as I'm sitting here today, that there are going to be dips. Every 10, 15 years, there are going to be dips. If I knew how to predict it, I would be a very, very wealthy man. But nobody can predict. But work on that way that in case there is a dip, that you could recover and start all over again and have sufficient cash to see yourself through.
Excellent advice. And special thank you to George Flowers in the promo for the show. He always talks about it. He says, have a good pen and paper handy. And of course, that in today's day and world, it might be an iPad or just sitting by a computer. But the advice that we have here today from Saul and Simeon is really incredibly valuable, and it's much appreciated that you joined me here on the show today on the Mind Your Business program. Moving to the relationship with banks, how important is it for a business to have a good working relationship with their bank? Meaning, is it all about who gives the lowest fees or the best interest rate? Describe the importance of a good banking relationship for a business.
The facts of the matter are, if you don't have a good relationship with a bank that knows you in good times and not so good times, you can rest assured when you need money, you're not going to get it. You obviously are going to need money when things are not going as they should, and then nobody wants to touch you. I believe that at earliest stages, a startup wouldn't get any lines of credit from banks, but once you're in business 2-3 years, whether you need the money or not, you should start developing a line of credit. You have a line of credit, whatever the amount is, you start off with small amounts, $100,000, then $200,000. Use it once or twice a year, because if you don't use it, you lose it, and keep on building up the relationship. Stay in a bank where there's very little officer turnover, so you get to really know the people, and they know you, that you're an honest, honorable person. And once you have that relationship going and you keep the bank informed constantly how your business is doing, and as long as you don't pull any surprises, a bank will support you even in the downturn of the economy. They will support you because they know that your intentions are good. They know how to guide you, and they know how to work with you. And getting back to the previous thing, when you start a relationship with a bank, and I found this, it must be a thing that banks do, they always ask the owner of the company, what does your second-tier management consist of? They're not going to insult them by saying, and when are you retiring? They want to know that they're not dealing with one individual, that there are other people there, other you know, family mm-hmm. members or important mm-hmm. people. And once you have that relationship going 4 or 5 years, really a bank, even if the business starts losing money, will support you. That's why banks are so, so important for expansion and for dips in the marketplace.
Very interesting. Now, just turning to the business side of that relationship, is there specific advice that you have that perhaps a business should try to first work up the capital for their needs as opposed to incurring debt?
Incurring debt is not a bad thing if the debt is based on something. In other words, if you're incurring debt because you want to cover losses, that's not a good thing, because all you're doing is you're digging yourself in deeper. For that, if you have faith in the company, invest your own money to cover losses. However, if you have a limited amount of capital and your sales are growing and your receivables are growing and you basically want to finance receivables, there's nothing wrong with that, because if you are geared for having $1 million of receivables and all of a sudden you have $3 million of receivables and you have to pay the vendors, that's what a bank is for. So debt is not a bad thing if it's used properly.
Very, very interesting. Now, as we approach the close of the show, we're not there yet, but in a few more minutes that we have, perhaps, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but perhaps do you have some type of, I mean, the stock market has been somewhat volatile in the last week or two. Do you have any prediction on where the market's heading in the next 6 to 12 months?
I'll answer the question simply. No. A loud no. No predictions. Our firm has never advised any clients for investment strategy. That's not what we're good for. I myself, if I want to invest, I go to professionals that help me, and I don't want to belittle anybody. They don't know how to answer this question either. I like to kid around when I talk to these stockbrokers or investment bankers. I tell them, what do you say when they ask you where the market is going? Well, they start giving me a whole repertoire of talking points. And I say to them, I think the best way to answer the question, let me go ask my 3-year-old grandson what he thinks. And whatever he thinks is just as good good advice as anybody can give. I believe nobody should panic. Nobody. We're not talking about day traders. We're talking about somebody that is in for the long haul, the stock market has a way of straightening itself out. Don't look at the papers every day or go online or whatever. Just keep a steady and you'll be okay.
Recently, your firm celebrated its 40th anniversary when it moved into its new headquarters. And you were very gracious in recognizing some of your clients that you've had for many years. You mentioned earlier in the show someone you had since 76. This is just good business advice for the listeners. What's your secret for having such an incredible retention rate?
I'll try to answer some of it, but as I said before, Simeon is looking at from the outside. The simple answer is service, and not only saying it, but actually doing it. Returning phone calls within the hour, or at least by the end of the day. Doing the tax returns, financial statements on time. Being there for meetings. Client calls, that's the most important call. They know we are their backup. We are like an outside CFO helping them with all the things that they don't know how to do. And Simeon, you've looked at this from the outside, watching how we've been doing this the last 15 years.
Well, I think it's mainly the way we look at a client is we have obviously a wide range of clients that have businesses, but we don't consider the business as the client. We consider our clients individuals who are business owners. So our complete focus is on the individual, and that individual happens to have a business, so we make sure that their business is running properly. We would sort of be involved in anything related to the business, which is not necessarily accounting related. It can always be the partnership disputes. There can be family issues, things of that nature. Being that we are very much dedicated to the individual, we get involved in a lot of aspects of the individual's life when it comes to business. So that comes with a loyalty and a trust, and we've developed that trust because we give it all. We don't come in once a year and provide services. We're there throughout the whole year, and they sort of instinctively pick up the phone and call us and bring us into the situation.
How does someone get in touch with your firm?
You can go to our website, which is www.snfco.com. That's snfco.com, and there you'll have all the information.
And for all your old-timers, is another way. It still works. 718-232-1111.
What's that?
That's a telephone.
Any final thoughts in the remaining minute or two that we have?
I had to show everybody that I believe in succession planning and in exit strategies, although I intend to work for another 30 years. I've chosen my son, and it's my sons. I have a few sons. They're all CPAs. To take over the operations of the firm, and now I can rest assured that everybody will be taken care of, and I think that's what everybody should do: have an exit strategy, and really be on par of all the things you have to know in a modern technological world.
Amazing. And Simeon, any final thoughts? Any final thoughts that you would have?
People have a limitation as far as what they know, so they should rely on professionals. It's worth the investment of bringing on professionals and not going with the attitude that you've been there, done that, and know it all. So you can sort of focus on what your strengths are and then rely on the professionals for where you need them.
Amazing. Well, we can't thank you enough. This is Saul Friedman and Simeon Friedman of the Saul N. Friedman and Company. Partners, again, Saul and Simeon are partners at this company, a CPA firm, business consultant group in the tri-state area, one of the leading ones in the tri-state area, for sharing your incredible advice and perspective here on the Mind Your Business program on 77 ABC. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's been our pleasure, and we really enjoyed it. I hope you invite us again.
Oh, please.
Pleasure, Yitz. Nice seeing you.
I'm sure we're going to get great feedback. And if you're just tuning in now, you missed something very, very special. You can go to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. Usually the podcast is up sometime by 10, 11 in the morning on Monday morning. There were many takeaways. The 1 plus 1 equals 3 is a great takeaway. If you didn't hear that, you must listen to the podcast. In case you missed last week, we had Stephen Aldrich, the Senior Vice President of Applications at GoDaddy. 2 weeks ago, Captain Sully Sullenberger. Really incredible interview. The week before, Matt Britton, the CEO of MRY. He talked all about how to market to millennials. really incredible content, rich, on these programs. So until next week, I thank you for tuning in. This is Yitzchak Saflis here on the Mind Your Business program. And stay tuned for next week's show. Again, Sunday night, 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. at 77 WABC.
WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he brings his business and marketing expertise to 77 WABC. Tune in to Mind Your Business every Sunday night from 11 until 12, right here on 77 WABC.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.